This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and for readers to read. I hope you all had a wonderful New Year's. I know I did. My eldest son managed to make it home for New Year's and it was fantastic. And it's a wonderful start for the New Year's. I'm happy to announce that I'm expanding my show to Thursdays. And this coming Thursday, on January 7th, my guest will be one of the greatest mystery writers of all time, Carolyn Hart. She was chosen as the Mystery Writers of America Grandmaster in 2014. And of course, she has been, she's won so many awards over the years. And ever since I read her one of her first mysteries, Death on Demand, I have been a great fan of hers. And I want to remind everyone to join me this Thursday for that interview. Now, at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be interviewing Brad Taylor, a New York Times bestseller who has written a wonderful book called The Forgotten Soldier. He is an American hero himself, a Delta Force guy, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. But first, I want to talk to a young writer, Evangeline Denmark, whose book, Curio, is being released today. I was really impressed when I got this book, when I got the advanced copy and I started reading it. I must say I had never been a great fan of what is called steampunk, but her book goes beyond that, and I'm really glad. Hi, Evangeline, are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
Hi, Evangeline. Oh, it's so nice to hear your voice.
Well, I am. Nice to hear you.
I'm so thrilled to have you on because, as I said, you know, steampunk isn't sort of my the type of book I normally read. But when I picked up your book and I started reading it, and perhaps it was sort of mystical. As a matter of fact, I started reading it one morning at 5 a.m. and I was just drawn into your book, into your world, because as I'll have you explain to people in a minute exactly what steampunk means, but you have created such a vivid world that I was just entranced. So it must be exciting for you today.
Thank you. Yes, it's very exciting. This is unlike anything. It's hard to even describe. It's surreal.
And your mom must be going crazy, huh?
Yes, my mother is very proud of me. My mom is also a best-selling novelist of fantasy novels. The Dragon Keeper Chronicles are what people usually recognize of her.
Well, she certainly has got you in the right frame of mind to create this book. It is in some ways it's so complicated. Let's tell a little bit about it. It's about a girl named Gray, and it takes place in a city. Explain.
Okay, it's set in an alternate history in Colorado, which is where I live, but around the turn of the century, and it's a mining town, but it's as grand as Chicago or New York would have been at the time. And of course, there was nothing like that here in Colorado around 1900. I mean, Denver was there, but it was not the bustling metropolis that Gray lives in. So in that way, it's alternate history. It's all made up.
The thing is, it's so detailed, and you have, of course, so many varied characters. Well, it's not just people, it's types of people, I suppose we should say. And all of these are your creation?
Thank you. Well, yes, they all pretty much came from my head. Of course, the chemists, who are the sort of the bad guys there in Mercury City, they are They were originally alchemists, and of course, you know, alchemy is actually, you know, a historical thing. So I did some research on that, but of course they've been changed by the magic that they practice, so they're now something completely different.
Well, you know, I just, when I, of course, tell a little bit about what it means to be steampunk. You put characters in, well, of course, the clothes are different, the times are different. Can you explain a little bit to the listeners who haven't experienced steampunk?
Sure. Steampunk is hard to explain, and the short answer is basically it's Victorian science fiction. And then I usually make a joke and say the long answer is Google it. Because it is hard to describe. There's an aesthetic, and then there's the genre. And but basically what you're looking at is a technology kind of put into the Victorian time period that would not have existed, but all powered by the power sources that they had in Victorian times, which were steam and clockwork. So that's kind of your basic premise. Pretty much any steampunk book is going to have technology powered by steam or clockwork. Now, it doesn't always take place in the Victorian time period. Mine is right on the cusp because Victorian time period ended in 1901. But there's other kinds of steampunk that falls in there. There's clockpunk, which is earlier. There's dieselpunk, which is around World War One, World War Two time frame. So that's kind of the basics. You're looking at things that are powered by steam. I like to tell people, though, that steampunk is for everyone because it's very much about what you want to bring to it, what your interests are, and the steampunk community is very open to anyone who wants to be in there.
Well, you know, of course, part of it, when you see the photos, and people do Google it, so many of the costumes are so beautiful.
Yes.
And, of course, you describe, you have a real gift for describing atmospherics and bringing your characters to life in terms of how they look and the clothes they're wearing. It's really fascinating. Now, this is a massive amount of, it's not so much research since it all comes out of your head, but you really have to almost storyboard this thing because there's so many different types of people. Well, you know, like Tox and some of the other people that you have. How do you do that? How do you keep it all straight? You have, what do you do, you know, from many writers wonder from a technical point of view, how do you do that? Are you using cards? Are you using more modern things? Do you have, what system are you using to keep all this in?
You know, I just, I keep a document that I call notes and, you know, whatever, curio notes, whatever book I'm working on. And I put anything that I need to remember in there, and so, you know, if it's a description of a person or a little bit of their history, I put it in there. As I was developing the world, and I, you know, wanted to create the backstory, kind of the origin of the chemists and the defenders and this battle that is still raging between them, I went in and just threw in a paragraph about that, you know, that original story. And then from that, I actually wrote the novella Mark of Blood and Alchemy, which is kind of the origin of the Curio universe. So, you know, that's how I do it. Other writers use Scrivener or use storyboards, and, you know, that's fantastic. You just do whatever works for you.
And how long did it take you to do this book? I mean, it's such a detailed book. It's not a simple book. I as I was reading, I was thinking, well, you know, some people could sit down and write like three books in the time that it would take to write this very... How long did it take you?
It's a long one, and it was quite the undertaking. It took about 3 years. Now, in that time, I wrote maybe the first two drafts the first year, submitted it, it got contracted, and then I rewrote it. So, and then there were edits. So, you know, that whole process took 3 years. you know, that was my particular experience. Certainly not the same for everyone.
Well, let's talk about that process. When you wrote this book, how did you get an agent? How did you send query letters? of course, you have a mother who has some pull. So
yes, she has some pull. I have kind of an interesting journey in terms of publication. I started writing 10 years ago. Actually, it was when I started writing novels, and it took me a while to find. YA. I wish that I had found YA, young adult fiction, right off the bat, and that I had known that that's what I wanted, because as soon as I started writing it, I fell in love. But, you know, unfortunately, that wasn't the case, and I tried a couple other genres, and, you know, your journey is your journey. You can't go back and second guess. But anyway, so I have gone through several agents that, that weren't right for me, depending on the genre, you know, because I was writing something else at the time. So actually, when I wrote Curio, I didn't have an agent, and I ended up submitting it to an editor through other channels because I knew her. So that's how that went.
Well, of course, it takes a very intelligent and very perspicacious type of agent or publisher to realize what she had in her hands when she first read this, because it's great. I mean, it really, I've read some steampunk. It never really grabbed me. But then when I read this, it was, I said to myself, this cuts across lines, because you really don't have to be interested in steampunk itself, because you have such a complete story, such a full world that you've created here in Mercury City, that I think anyone would enjoy this book.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think it does kind of blend lines between fantasy, alternate history, and then I like to say it's steampunk flavored, because it has those elements, but it's not heavy on the technical aspect of steampunk, which, you know, some novels are, and that appeals to, you know, certain kind of readers who love, love, love that gadgetry. You know, I kind of love the aesthetic. I love the look of the gadgetry, and so I wove that in, but it's not quite so technical.
Well, you did, and of course you managed to get one of the best publishers for young adult fiction, and you're so lucky, because they've done a first class job of it. Because Zondervan and Blink are probably the very, very best publishers for this type of book, because they of course, obviously, I could see from the work that they have, you've worked with a great editor and really turned out a first class book. So I think you're going to have great success with this book.
Well, thank you, and I absolutely agree. I love Blink, and I'm so honored to be a part of their family, and I couldn't have asked for a better publisher. Blink was who I was going for, and I got my dream.
Well,
so, you know.
you know, it's always good to hold out to get to the right publisher, because this, you know, they are, as I said, I think they are the best in this genre, in this type of book, because it is first-class work. They don't scrimp on the paper, the style, or anything else. Everything is very, very well done. And now, I think one of the things, of course, I know that they have great distribution, and so I was so happy when I got my copy and got to read it. And I, you know, thinking about it as I'm getting towards the end of the book, and I'm learning more of the characters and learning more of the details, and I can see it so clearly in my head, and I said to myself, wow, you know, not since I read the first Harry Potter, when my boys were reading it, I read that, I read that, and you know, you could see it, and it was very vivid. You could see the world of Harry Potter, and in your case, I mean, I can see your world visually.
Wonderful.
And I have a feeling that you know, with this, because you're dealing with such a top level publisher, that I'm sure that they're going to get it in front of you know, agents who are involved in film, because this book is crying out to be made into a film.
Oh, thank you. I love to hear that.
No, I could, you know, I've written scripts and I see things. I'm a sort of a very visual person, and I see things in terms of scripts. And so when I'm reading this, I kept thinking, oh, if I was doing this, if I was doing that, I want to, you know, put this in the script, and so it's so visual. It's really, I think it's absolutely delightful. And I kept thinking to myself, oh, she must have had so much fun writing this, you know, just.
Oh, I did.
it's the kind of book where you must have gotten really, you know, into the world. And I mean, do you have a certain type of, are you like writing in the morning, writing in the night? Do you sort of go into your own world?
I do, yes, very much so. Especially when I'm, you know, in an intense writing phase, I, you know, get my kids off to school and then write all day. And it is hard to sometimes come out of that, but I do, you know, you have to take breaks, otherwise you you stagnate.
Okay, I did. How many kids do you have?
I have two boys.
Two boys. Oh boy, that's wonderful. Well, that's what I have too, and they grow up too fast. How old are yours?
14 and 11.
Oh my goodness, they're already getting so big. You know, I looked at your picture. My gosh, you look like a baby. I didn't expect you to have children that old.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, really, you look like a teenager. I thought, whoa, this is. But it's fantastic. They must be proud of their mom, huh?
They are. They're excited, and we had a book launch party on Saturday, and they got to come. And there was, you know, it was all steampunk. I dressed steampunk, and we have this really neat coffee shop here in town. It's called Jive. And it's all steampunk on the interior. So we had the party there, and it was this perfect atmosphere. So, yes, they're enjoying it.
Oh, well, that's going to be a fantastic thing for them to be able to share with their friends. And I'm sure all their friends are going to love the book, because it is, as you said, a young adult fiction. And although I know quite a few women, as a matter of fact, I know quite a few seniors who enjoy this kind of complicated world. And mm-hmm. I think I'm going to recommend it to them, because I think, as I said, you cut across the genre. And what I like is that there is this element of mystery. You don't know how it's going to turn out. And I kept, you know, I wanted to know the ending. And I think that you're going to have a really great time with it. And I'm so, so happy that, you know, I got to talk to you on the day that you launch the book. And as I said, do you have a website that you can give us?
Mm-hmm. Yes, www.evangelinedenmark.com.
Okay, and I'm sure you're on Facebook too. People can find you on Facebook?
Yes. What? There's not a whole lot of Evangeline Denmarks out there, so.
Yeah, it's a beautiful name. I don't know if you made it up, but it's a beautiful.
No, that is my real name.
That's your real name. Well, of course, your mother writes what?
She writes...
romance?
No, she has written romance, but she writes fantasy, dragons, and...
Okay, well, that's why she named you Evangeline. Oh, what a beautiful... She's so clever. Well, you know, I want to thank you, and I want to encourage all my listeners to, you know, if they think they're too old for steampunk, Curio is a wonderful book by Evangeline Denmark. And if you have any younger people in your family, they will enjoy this book. I think it's when a writer really is vivid and has developed great characters, anyone can read the book and enjoy it. And you've done a great job, mm-hmm. Evangeline.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, well, thanks so much for being on today, and I'm looking forward. Here's the deal, Evangeline. I had you on today, so when you have the premiere of your movie, you have to invite me.
Oh, you've got it.
Okay, yeah. That's great. And say hi to your mom for me, because I know she's just like, oh, just shaky with excitement.
Okay.
And, you know, I have to have her on one day. So let's stay in contact, okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Evangeline. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. On January 30th, when best-selling author Tim Dorsey will be signing autographs of his latest adventure, Coconut Cowboy. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
Coming up Tuesday on the Rocket Sports and Entertainment Network show, Roy Cummings of the Tampa Tribune will be on to discuss the Buccaneers' 6-10 finish on the season. They will pick 9th in the upcoming NFL draft. Who will the Buccaneers play next season? We'll go over that. We'll also talk Major League Baseball. The 2016 Hall of Fame class will be announced. Ken Griffey Jr. is on the ballot. We'll break down some of the other guys and what their chances are of getting in. All that and more. Afternoons 2 to 4 here on the TAN Talk Radio Network.
At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our exciting independent lifestyle is the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room, a continental breakfast, all utilities, including cable and telephone, housekeeping with linen service, scheduled transportation, including trips for shopping, local restaurants, theater, and more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury waterfront senior living with $1 million view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service really makes the difference.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back. And in a few minutes, I'm going to have as my guest Brad Taylor, who's written a wonderful new book called The Forgotten Soldier. As I'm waiting for him to get online, I just wanted to remind you that the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group will be meeting this Saturday, January 9th, at Feather Sound Panera. Now, that's on 2285 Ulmerton. If you have a script, or if you've been thinking about writing a script, or if you want to know how to get into the film business, this group, the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group, is the perfect place for you to find out more about the film industry and about writing a script. It is headed by Barbara Harrington, a best-selling author, and you will really enjoy it. They read every time they meet. They get together over coffee. They analyze different scripts. All the people can bring in. You can bring in your script, and if you want to just read part of it yourself, or if you want, there are actors there, of course, ready to take on the parts, and who love to read scripts cold, and you can get feedback from other authors and find out what you're missing, what they think you need to do, and just generally learn about the script business, learn about which programs are best to use. It's just a fun group. There should be 20, 30, even 40 people there. And so it's really a lot of fun. And that will be meeting this Saturday at Panera's on Ulmerton. And why don't you go out there and meet them? This is a great opportunity to actually say, I am going to write a script this year. 2016 is my year. And it is one of the joys in life to hear your words written, the words that you've written, to hear them read. And so even if you never make a movie, at least you get to hear your script read. And so it's a lot of fun. I really suggest that you join them. I hope in a few minutes we'll have Brad on. And I want to talk just for a minute about him. He's an incredible writer and a member of the Delta Force. So I wanted to have him on as soon as I read his book, his latest book. Of course, I've read his other books before, and as a sort of action thriller writer, you can't get better than Brad Taylor. So we'll have him on in a few minutes. Then, meanwhile, I also want to remind you that this Thursday, in just 2 days, I'm going to have Carolyn Hart on, and she will tell us about how she has written over the years and developed one of the best ongoing series called Death on Demand, a story about a mystery, a bookstore owner. Who has a mystery bookstore and gets herself into all sorts of trouble. So it's going to be lots of fun to talk to Carolyn about her books. And I'm just waiting. Now I'm looking at Ed over there, who looks so nice and sweet. And he's looking at the phone, and I'm looking at the phone. And we're all saying, "Ooh, this is the way to start the new year, and we need to get Brad on." So But he's smiling. Ed's smiling. Ed's always optimistic. He's an optimistic sort of person. So he keeps me calm over there. So there he is, smiling. And he's sure that in any moment the phone is going to ring, and we will have Brad Taylor on. And, of course, I have decided to adopt Ed's optimistic nature and not worry about whether or not the phone will ring. And if I have to talk for the next 35 minutes by myself, I guess I could do that too. Although I don't talk as much as I used to. My family used to complain that I was always talking, but I don't talk as much as I used to. Well, I suppose I could gab on. One thing too, he's smiling. I think he's happy. If Ed's happy, I'm happy. Do my music, Ed. Are we on? Hi. Okay, are we on? Okay.
Hey, Patsy, he's just wrapping up another interview, and you know how some people talk too much.
Yes,
but anyways,
I do.
He's going to be with us shortly.
He's going to be with us shortly. Well, that's great, Ed. Thanks. I knew with your optimistic attitude that I didn't have to worry too much. So we're just about ready to get Brad Taylor on and talk to him. I was going to say, I don't know if I should tell him that I think he's absolutely gorgeous. I get it myself in trouble sometimes when I tell these writers, well, I only tell the guy writers that they're absolutely gorgeous. I did that to Doug Brunt, Megyn Kelly's husband, when he was on, and I just sort of swooned over him like a schoolgirl. And some people complained and said, you know, you don't have to act so gushy when you have a good-looking guy on. But what can you do? You can't help it when they're gorgeous. It's hard to avoid mentioning it. So I don't know if I probably will embarrass him. Why not?
Brad's ready.
Brad's ready. Oh, well, I'm sorry. Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Are you there, Brad?
I am.
Okay, I was just talking. I don't think you heard that. Well, probably it's good. I was just talking about how gorgeous you are. And so I was, no, it's true. So I don't know why, you know, I'll introduce you properly in a minute. But of course, you're Delta Force. And I have this image. I think it's highly inappropriate.
You should see me right now.
No. I have this image of you, like, getting up in the morning. I don't know why I have this image of you standing in front of the bathroom mirror. Of course, your gorgeous Delta body, and just looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, "Oh my gosh, I'm a colonel. I'm gorgeous. I'm a Delta Force, and I've written."
I need to get you with my wife.
And see, this is a problem. I get myself in trouble doing this because I did this with Doug Brunt, and I really embarrassed him. And you know, his wife is Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
And I really embarrassed the poor guy, and he didn't know what to do. He's like, oh boy, Megan's going to get me now. But, you know, I don't know how perfect you can be. I mean, Colonel Taylor, I feel, you know, I'm going to call you Brad, I suppose, but it's such an honor to talk to you, of course. And so I imagine, you know, this is it. What can I say about you? I mean, you're like everything. Not only are you Delta Force and 8 years active in Delta Force, but you also have written 8 bestsellers in 4 years. I mean, who does that? Nobody does that. You're amazing.
Well, thank you very much. That's why I say you need to talk to my wife and convince her of that.
Oh, I'm sure she's convinced of it. She's a very lucky woman wow. Oh, it's amazing. Okay, I've got to get this image of you standing in front of the bathroom mirror with your Delta body off, or I'm not going to be able to concentrate on this. So let's get serious here about your new book, The Forgotten Soldier. Of course, I have to mention to everyone that, of course, as I said, you're in Delta Force, which is the first Special Forces Operation Detachment. Now, your book is about, your hero is Pike Logan, and this is it's the ninth book in the series?
It is the ninth book in the series.
Wow. It went so fast. I don't know how you did it so quickly.
Yeah, I know.
you live Pike Logan. So, tell us a little bit about the book, and then I'll talk more about you.
Sure. The book came out, I used to be in Special Operations in the military, and we had... it was an enormous amount of work to get anything done. There's all kinds of oversight. You've got a patchwork of laws, and all those laws were created because somebody did something wrong. And we used to always say, wouldn't it be neat if we had, you know, Unit X where we didn't have all this? Well, when I started writing fiction, I made Unit X. It's the task force. But as I went through the series, Pike Logan, the main character, goes off the reservation, and he ends up saving the day because, hey, I'm writing a book. Of course he's going to save the day. But in the back of my head, I always thought, you know, it would take one guy and this whole thing would go bad. There would be a horrific repercussions if somebody did not do the right thing, because there's little oversight. And that's what I explored in Forgotten Soldier. A guy thinks he's doing the right thing, and he's about to cause a horrific event.
You know, I get these images. I don't know. There must be something wrong with my brain or something. But one of the things, I got this wonderful idea while I was reading your book, and in one point, one of the characters is, let's say, tied to a chair with duct tape, in the nicest way possible.
Yeah.
And I just got this image how I would like to duct tape the presidential candidates, all of them, both parties, just duct tape them to a chair and have them read your book, just so maybe it would open their eyes and maybe they would, like, everybody would start getting serious, because you are so prescient. You are so, I mean, you are so up to the moment. What you're talking about here is so real. Of course, you know, and you feel like when the candidates are talking, or any politicians are talking, they just don't get it. They don't get the dangers out there.
Well, I think that a lot of that's, I call it soundbite strategy. They've got such limited time to talk about anything. Of course, I'm not sure whether they understand the issues or not. But in a 24-hour news cycle, you've got, I can only say one sentence, then I'll say X. We could solve all the world's problems with X. And I sit there and scream at the TV, that is so juvenile, you cannot possibly... You can't cure ISIS with one brush. It's a complex problem set. But I think it's a lot of it's a function of the news cycle. You don't get the chance to actually say what you would actually do.
Well, I hope that you're right, that they understand it. But I have a feeling that, one of the characters in the new book is the Secretary of State. Now, of course, there's no resemblance to anyone living or dead, but... the naivety of this man seems so parallel to some of the people that we are dealing with today that they really don't seem to get it, how really serious the situation is.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it's a function of a viewpoint of what one side versus the other. I mean, if I was going to be honest, I'd say the military generally looks at everything, we're a hammer, everything's a nail. And Secretary of State, the State Department looks at everything the exact opposite, says, don't let the military do anything. We can solve it all with diplomacy. Both of them at the extremes are wrong. Somewhere in the middle is right. But I've seen both sides of that. It's like, hey, we've got to do something right now. This is going to happen if we don't. No. I can solve the problem by talking. And it doesn't work that way.
Well, you know, as I said, of course, this is a very big book, the Forgotten Soldier. It's not, you know, a spare little book, and it's very detailed. It's beautifully done. Of course, you've carried these characters, most of the characters, the ones who haven't died off, through your books. And so you obviously know these people very well, and that makes it a little bit easier. But where did you start writing? I mean, was it so many hours sitting out and, you know, doing a surveillance or something, and you had nothing else to do, so you wrote them in your head? Or how did you start writing?
No, actually, it was a lot of writing in the head. I was always a voracious reader. I've always has been, and I still am. And I always wanted to write a book. And I always had ideas in my head, and it's exactly that. You sit there for, you know, 12 hours staring at something, and you come up with ideas. And I left the special mission unit world and was teaching at the Citadel, and I had a lot of time on my hands. I mean, I left, it was constant deployments, constant stress, constant everything else, and then I was teaching, which is more along the lines of rinse and repeat. Once you do the first class, the next five you're going to do are exactly like the first one, so I had a lot of time on my hands. And I decided to see if I could write a book, because I wanted to. And then lightning struck, and the thing actually sold. And my editor said, can you write a second one? I said, I think so. And here I am.
Wow. most people in 20 years are happy to get, like, one bestseller. And you just, like, every 6 months, oh, well, another one. It's beautiful.
Well, it's not oh, well. I mean, it's a lot of work. Well, I mean, I'm writing book 10 right now. I just got back from Poland, Slovakia, and Austria doing research, and I'm about halfway through, and it's due in about a month.
Okay, well, your books are always sort of predictive of what is going to happen in the world. So, okay, that gives us some idea where we should look for the next danger problems.
Yeah. Yeah, and The Forgotten Soldier. Actually, I look for threat streams. Most of the press that comes out in America, you don't see it until it really hits the big screen, so to speak. But the threat streams are out there. And in The Forgotten Soldier, I had to have a way to getting some bad guys into Greece. And there was a small problem they had with refugees coming from Syria and Libya. And so I said, that's something that we're looking at. And I think we could use that in the novel itself. And so I did. And now, of course,
and lo and behold,
it's enormous.
Exactly. I mean, no one would have thought, I mean, when you first wrote it, it had to be at least 6 months ago, that this would be such a big problem. And yet, of course, over and over, you have come out with things before other people. And I know in your publicity they say, he reads obscure newspapers. And I thought, well, yeah, sure, he reads obscure newspapers. But I have a feeling you know a lot of obscure people, too.
Well, definitely. I mean, I still do security contracting, and you know, I'm not read on to certain programs. I'm not read on to certain procedures and things that are going on in the world. But you can't help it. He's a good friend of mine. We end up talking, and then you find things out that gives me a thread to track down. He's not telling me anything classified. His job is to protect America, and he mentioned something. I'm like, oh, I didn't hear about that. And the next thing I do is go out and do some serious research on it. And then find out, holy moly, he's right. That's a big one. Like Burundi right now in Africa is about to split apart the seams. Does anybody in America even know where that is? No, but it's there.
Well, exactly. And I think you were one of the first people to talk about Boko Haram. No one knew about Boko Haram.
Yeah, nobody in America knew about Boko Haram, but I tell you what, Nigeria sure did.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They've been around for a long time, and we used to study them.
Well, I have relatives
away from Al Qaeda.
I have relatives who were living in Nigeria, well, for, you know, almost 20 years, and so of course I was very familiar with Boko Haram and knew what they were doing and knew how terrible the situation was, and saw sort of the growing menace of it, and of course that was in which book? Days of Rage.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's you knew all about it, but
most people don't.
American had no idea.
Exactly. Well, that's why I think this book, the Forgotten Soldier, is so perfect for this cycle. And I hope, well, I'm sure it's going to be a bestseller, and I hope that it's not just a bestseller, but that people will talk about it and people will pass it on to other people, you know, just so that more people understand how very, very dangerous the situation is. And of course, you're right there talking about Saudi Arabia, talking about, which is right now in the news, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, with Iran, that fault line is going to split wide open. They've had a Cold War going on for quite a while, but it's about to get hot. Well, it has gotten hot in Yemen, but it's, I don't know what's going to happen with that. It's going to cause an intractable problem with Syria.
And, of course, it's nice that you get to go on a lot of the talk shows and share your knowledge. So I hope that the people in power are listening, because, as I said in the beginning, it's worrisome. I think one of the big problems why sort of Americans are antsy and sort of nervous, because you don't know what's going on. You don't know if our politicians are paying attention.
I tell you, the thing that concerns me the most is that it's not so much whether they know about it or not, it's whether they're willing to execute what's right, or do you want to tell the American people what they want to hear, or do you want to tell the American people what is really going on?
Exactly, that's the problem. And I even when it came like to the Chechen bombers, you were warning about Chechens long before the Boston Massacre.
Oh yeah, Chechnya, Dagestan, all of that entire Caucasus region is right now. Russia's going to have we're worried about people going over and fighting in Syria and coming back and blowing us up like happened in San Bernardino. Russia's got it 800 times worse than us. I mean, the Chechens that have gone to Syria and are coming home are exponentially larger than what's coming to America.
When, of course, you were active as a Delta Force for 8 years, and it's nice that you can put all of that excitement into your books, which you do. I mean, you really make your books are so thrilling. It was like I was reading The Forgotten Soldier, and I had work to do. I had, you know, it was like, you know, getting ready for the holidays and stuff, and I kept saying, I can't. I have to read this book.
That's music to my ears. That's what I like to hear.
Well, no, I mean that you're so. Oh, you're just so good. I mean, it really is. You know, it's funny. I was also thinking this, and there's like three Brads. I don't know. Brad became like a very popular name. There's Brad Thor, Brad Meltzer, and Brad Taylor.
And, yeah, well, they were certainly before me.
Yeah. So. But, you know, I hope that people really remember Brad Taylor, Colonel Brad Taylor. I love saying Colonel Brad Taylor. I think it's fantastic. I recently had a Medal of Honor winner on my program, Colonel Leo Thorsness, who wrote a book called Surviving Hell. He was a POW F-105 pilot. And, you know, you guys, you earn that colonel. And I know you're a lieutenant colonel, but, you know, it's wonderful to be able to say Colonel Brad Taylor, because you know what you're writing about, that's for sure. And that's
I appreciate it.
Gone through Delta Force, which, of course, not many people get through Delta Force. I think you have like what percentage of people actually ever make it through Delta Force who start off into the program?
I really can't talk about it.
No, well, it's a okay. Well, we know
it's a small percentage.
It's a very small percentage of people who can actually make it through the course, which I know is one of.
Starts out way before then. I mean, it's a very small percentage you even get invited to try. So I mean, it's a long process.
And then it's winnowed down, and so that's what I said, that the people who actually make it to Delta Force are something special, which is why I know that in the morning you look in front of the mirror and say, ha, 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 I'm gorgeous and I'm in Delta Force.
No, I look in the mirror and thank God every day for what I've been blessed with.
Yes, well, and I know you've done things that we will never know about, but it's just wonderful that, you know, you've managed to become such a great writer, because, you know, not everybody who takes it up as a sort of second career can do so well. And your writing is so very, very good. I'm very I can't. One of the things I wanted to say is, you know, you use that you alternate between first person and third person.
Yes.
And I love that. It makes it so intimate.
Well, what's funny about that is apparently you're not supposed to do that. I've never had any writing instruction in my
life. I know. They say don't do it.
And then somebody said, how'd you know to break the rules? And I was like, I actually didn't know that was a rule.
Well, exactly. They give this crazy rule. And now the only other person who does it, well, as great as you, is Nelson DeMille. Nelson DeMille has always been doing that. And I love his
book. Joseph Fender did it as well. Yeah. Like I said, I'm a voracious reader, and so my writing instruction was reading. And I read the John Corey books, and I thought, that's kind of cool.
I love that. I think it makes it so intimate. You really get to know the hero. I mean, you really feel like you're... Well, that's why I couldn't put your book down, because every time I'd get to the first person part, I wouldn't put it down for a minute. I'd get to the third person, I'd say, okay, I could put it down and go wash the dishes. But when I'm in the first person, I'm just stuck there. I can't stop reading. And you're right. People make this crazy rule. Well, and Nelson DeMille broke that rule and did it with his books and to a tremendous success. And you are the next best person doing this because you do it so seamlessly. You go from, you know, it just moves. It just blends so beautifully. And I really wanted to compliment you on that because I think that's a
high compliment because that's actually, like I said, I got instruction from reading, and Nelson DeMille was definitely his the John Corey books with Plum Island all the way through the Panther, all those.
Well, I love him.
What do you mean that's a rule? He's clearly an established author. Doesn't he know the rules?
So you can see the great success in breaking rules. And, you know, this program is for writers and those who dream of writing. And I always tell writers, you know, write it the way you feel. Write it the way that you see it and feel it as you're going along. So if you're, you know.
Well, actually, I wrote One Rough Man. The first book I wrote was all in third person. And I went back and rewrote it. Every scene that Pike had in it, I changed to first person because I couldn't get the emotion out I wanted. I had to actually rewrite the entire thing that way.
Exactly. I knew that, and I as I'm reading your books, I feel that way, that you know what you want. You know what Pike wants is feeling, well, because you are probably Pike and doing all these crazy things.
No. I like to say that I'm Pike's pinky toe. Pike is an amalgamation of people I've served with that I'm certainly no Pike.
Well, I'm modest. You know, you Delta guys are modest and, you know, you don't want to blush too much. But I have a feeling you're right up there. And that's why I just love and I wanted to compliment you on that that first person, third person success because you've done a great job. I just love
it. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, of course, your book is out and it's available on Amazon and everywhere that good books are sold.
It is. Yeah, you can find it just about anywhere.
And do you have a webpage that you send people
to? Yeah, I was just going to say. I have. If you can go to bradtaylorbooks.com, they can read an excerpt of any of the novels and they can get a taste of Pike Logan for free.
Okay. Well, the wonderful thing about the internet now and buying books on the internet is if you haven't started the series, you can start the series. But if not, just start right here on this one, and I'm sure people will be thrilled and want to go back if they haven't already read the earlier books because it is when we talk about a thriller, you've got a thriller here. So
thank you very much.
I hope you enjoy your book tour. I suppose we'll see you on Fox and CNN and all the talk shows. And I just want to say that I will be looking for you, and I will stop imagining you in the shower and looking in the mirror in the bathroom. Tell your wife you're safe, and she's a very lucky woman. She's a very lucky woman to have you. And America is very lucky to have men like you. So, Colonel Brad Taylor, I just want to thank you so much for being on my show. It's been a thrill for me to talk to you.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. It was a fun talk.
Okay. Well, have fun on the rest of your interviews, and look forward to talking to you, well, probably 6 months from now when you have another bestseller coming out. Okay?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, great. Take care. Happy
Bye-bye.
New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Okay. Bye now. Wow. Oh, that was nice. It was worth waiting for him to get on the phone. I wish he could come down to Florida. Maybe next time I'll invite him down here when he has his next bestseller out, which at the rate he's going, it'll be 6 months from now, sometime in the summertime. So one of the things, of course, it was nice to hear him say, and I could tell everybody, that when they tell you there's a rule, you can go ahead and break it. And he's done a great job in breaking rules, and you see what success he's had. So I want to, again, remind you to join. I'm going to be at this meeting on January 9th at Panera's. So if you want to meet me or meet all the group who are going to be talking about film and movie scripts, join me at, it's going to be between 3 and 5 at Panera's on Ulmerton Road, the one at 2285, right at the beginning, down by the bridge going to Tampa. So join us, and that'll be from 3 to 5. And, of course, I want to thank Big Ed in the control room. I've really, really, come to depend on Ed. He is calm, as I said, and it's just a joy to look at him through the glass window. And we've got a big surprise. Ed has found a magic button and a magic control button that, you know, this building where we're broadcasting from is very old. And we're going to one day push this magic button, and we're going to go back in time. And I understand on the other side, once he pushes this button, this entire control room, my booth here, is going to go back in time. And we're going to be interviewing famous authors from the past. And in February, we're going to call on Ernest Hemingway, who's going to be right here in the studio with me, and we'll be interviewing him about his latest book. So look forward to that, and Big Ed is going to be a big part of that for me. So remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. If you haven't started writing, start writing now. And then join me this Thursday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper with my guest, Carolyn Hart. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it and have a great week. And hello to everyone up north in northern Michigan, the Youpers. Have a happy new year, Youpers. Miss you all. Take care. Bye-bye.